members, we'll get this meeting started. We don't have a quorum yet, so welcome to the committee and commissioner and members. This is going to be a little bit different from the other overviews you've had so far, in that we're going to also do an overview, but she's also going to present her change items and her budget request. And that's why you've got your budget books in front of you. Now, these are going to get a lot thicker before you know. Right now, the only thing that's in them is the Department of Revenue's change requests, but they'll get a lot thicker later on. So, welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, members. Thank you for your time this morning to provide you with an overview of the Minnesota Department of Revenue and the services that we provide to our customers and your constituents, and then also the opportunity to present the governor's recommended changes for the agency's budget as was released on Tuesday. So we appreciate the opportunity to very quickly get in front of you with our change items.
You want to give us your name and
that's right, Mr. Chairman.
I forgot
sorry
to say
it's
that.
A little early for me, so I haven't had all of my coffee yet. My name is Cynthia Barley. I'm the commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And with me today is our deputy commissioner, Lee Ho. We had intended to also have assistant commissioner Alyssa Haugen with us today, but she is taking care of some other matters, and so you will have an opportunity to meet her a little bit later in session. Lee oversees the day-to-day operations of the agency, and of course, we have a significant role here in Minnesota. We want to provide you with information about how we strive to meet our customers' needs through efficient and effective tax administration, providing quality customer service to Minnesota taxpayers, and our continuous improvement commitment. The Department of Revenue serves all kinds of customers. Our job is to help customers meet their tax obligations under Minnesota's tax code as enacted by all of you. We want to make sure that we have the resources that we need to meet those demands from our customers. I first want to share with you the agency's mission, vision, and values. Our mission of working together to fund Minnesota's future connects... To make sure that everyone, our mission is that we work together to fund Minnesota's future, because of course the general fund dollars that we collect really are what provide services across the state of Minnesota. As you heard from the governor on Tuesday, his recommendations are to increase their funding for education and health and human services, housing, broadband, and a number of important investments across the state of Minnesota. If you look at what the general fund supports, the biggest share of that is in education and human services, or essential services to Minnesotans. Our vision is that everyone reports, pays, and receives the right amount, no more, no less. And what we mean by that is that we have a system that works for people to be able to file and get it right the first time, and then we also make sure that we are providing people with access to all of the credits that they're entitled to under our code, and also making sure that they are paying the right amount. And if they have provided us with less information or less tax than that is due, then we of course have enforcement activities that we can make sure that they are paying the right amount. We do all of this with governed by our four values of integrity, respect, excellence, and accountability. We take very seriously that we have a big job to do for the state of Minnesota, that our customers are sharing with us detailed financial information. We have to hold ourselves to the highest possible standards as we serve our customers. As you probably know, I hope you know, individual income tax season started on January 28th. And the individual income tax season is what most Minnesotans think of when they think of the Minnesota Department of Revenue. But individual income tax are just one of the many tax types. We have over 30 tax types that we administer at the department. Well-known tax types like income tax and sales tax, but also mineral, lawful gambling, tobacco, and a dry cleaner fee that we also administer. We work year-round with our customers, not just during the spring when they think about tax filing, to help them understand and meet their obligations under Minnesota's 48 separate tax laws. We make their interactions with the department as efficient as possible. And we think of taxpayers as customers. This drives all of the work that we do and is a part of how we train our employees to interact with our public. So we think about our customers, of course, the 2.9 million individual income tax filers who will file their taxes before April 15th this year. As of yesterday, we had about 620,000 Minnesotans have already filed their taxes. If you have not yet filed your taxes, you do have until April 15th, but there are 600,000 Minnesotans who have already met their obligation. And we are also sending out refunds, of course. We've sent out about 250,000 refunds already in the first few weeks of our filing season. It's important to remember that these 2.9 million individuals vary greatly. So we have taxpayers who have sophisticated tax accountants and professionals helping them file their returns. We might also be dealing with an individual who is filing taxes for the first time because they have their first job, might be somebody new to our country, an immigrant, or someone who is unfamiliar with or new to Minnesota and unfamiliar with their with our obligations in Minnesota. We serve all of you. As legislators, part of our job is to provide revenue analyses for the bills, that the tax bills that you all are considering as we move through session. We work with tax professionals. We also do specific outreach with certain customers. We make sure that we are in places where our customers are. So if there is a veterans group who wants us to come and talk about the benefits available to veterans, we will absolutely do that. The same goes with seniors and farmers, community groups around the state. When the Red Bull detachment was returning from their deployment overseas to Minnesota, we met them at their first entry point and talked with them about the credits that would be available to them for their service in a combat zone. We also oversee the property tax system. So our customers in that space include all 87 Minnesota counties and their property assessors. There are over 800 licensed assessors in the state of Minnesota. The Board of Assessors is housed at the Department of Revenue that governs their licensure. Our job is to help make sure that Minnesota property taxes, although administered by counties, is consistent across the state. Because it's a one state law, your property tax shouldn't differ by the county that in which you live or the jurisdiction in which your assessment is completed. Over 415,000 businesses file and pay taxes in Minnesota, and about 160,000 of those are in our sales tax space. So retailers who collect that trust tax on behalf of the state from those customers and then remit it to the department. And again, our business customers vary greatly. We could be dealing with a Fortune 100, as you know. We have a number of those here in Minnesota. It could be a startup that somebody is starting in their own home. And so we do strive to provide that very broad spectrum of services depending upon what that customer needs. We work to make sure that people have the information they need and whatever level of service that they need from us. One of the things that we want to make sure we also talk about this morning is our volunteer income tax assistance. So as people are thinking about their filing, if they need a little bit of help, there are over 200 VITA sites open across the state of Minnesota where IRS-certified volunteers will help them prepare their individual income tax return and a property tax refund claim if that is applicable to them. There are different, this is aimed at serving older people, so 60 or older. There's an AARP, very strong support for this program. If you have a disability, limited English, or have an annual income of less than $55,000, you may be eligible to have your taxes prepared for free by qualified and trained volunteers. And again, we have over 200 sites across the state of Minnesota. If you're interested in finding out where those are, if you go to our website and put in free file into our search box, you will come up with a map of across the state of Minnesota. And each year, these volunteers work to make sure that, again, Minnesotans are paying and receiving the right amount of tax. And so there are many credits available under Minnesota's law. And so these sites process nearly $128 million in refunds, which is an important part of our tax system here in Minnesota, is that people are able to get the refunds that they're entitled to under Minnesota law. We also want to make sure that you know about our free income tax software that is available through the department, through the department's website. This is a coalition of vendors, software vendors, who provide product in the tax software marketplace. And through an organization called Free File Alliance, which is a collaboration with the IRS, these vendors provide software for access for free to individuals in Minnesota who may qualify. Each software company provides its own criteria, but generally, if your adjusted gross income is about $66,000 or less, or some offer free access for military veterans, you may be eligible to access that software for free and file your state tax return for free. This is really important because we think electronic filing is really the best way to file your taxes. You will always make sure that you have the most up-to-date forms and systems. It takes you step-by-step through the filing process, so you don't have to worry about doing any worksheets yourself. The software will ask you the right questions, and you plug in the amounts, and it will prepare both your federal and your state return. And then it saves you time, of course, from having to mail your return to us. We also encourage direct deposit as for any refund that you might be having. It, of course, saves the state that postage, but also will get it to you much more quickly and into your bank account quickly. Before we move off of income tax filing, I also want to make sure that we take a moment to talk about some of the initiatives that we've had at the department to really help our customers understand their tax obligations. As all of you know, if you've had a chance to read Minnesota's tax code, it is written, of course, as it should be in, you know, very legal language. Our job is to translate that for Minnesotans. And so we have worked very hard on plain language. So when we send letters to our customers, we try to tell them exactly why they're getting a letter from us, what they need to do in response, and how they need to respond if they need to. So with direct access to phone numbers and areas on our website. And right now during tax filing season, one of the things we're doing is sending out letters about verification of identity. And so we want to make sure that that is a very clear understanding. As we get into a little bit more of our presentation, we're going to talk about the issues related to identity theft fraud. But I wanted to let you know about the initiative that we've had underway in the department for about 5 years called Plain Language, and we've really worked hard to make sure that everything that we put out to our customers is understandable. We, of course, have thousands of letters that we send every year, so we are still working through to make sure we have all of those in our plain language standards, but it's really an important tool to make sure that people understand what their obligations are. We also use social media. Some of us are more familiar with social media than others, but we have a Facebook page, we have a Twitter feed. We want to make sure that we are getting information into every channel where our customers might want to find that. And that includes things like trading videos and information about how to file. So we want to make sure that they have, I personally, when I first heard that the department had a Facebook page where you could go and like us, I thought that seemed a little unusual, but it's true that people do like us, and they also share with us their concerns, and then when they have those concerns, we can help address that in that forum, so we're sharing that information with everyone. So, and in part of the way we always make sure we're thinking about how to serve our customers, one of the areas that we have really been hearing some feedback about our customers is about sales tax. You're familiar that last summer the Supreme Court changed the rules about how states can collect tax from remote sellers. But even before then, as you are aware, Minnesota has a number of local option sales taxes that have been put in place, authorized by the legislature over the years. And so we have heard from our customers, our sales tax retailers, that they need more help in understanding how to get the right amount of tax applied to that transaction. And so we are showing you two examples here and in your packets. One is a sales tax rate calculator. So by putting in a 9-digit zip code, it will populate that and give you the exact correct sales tax that is due in that jurisdiction. We also have a downloadable spreadsheet. So if your software that you're using for your business does not provide you with this information, you can download our Excel spreadsheet. You can plug in the transactions, and then it will help you get the right sales tax. And then we're very excited about our sales tax rate map. So So this is a map across of all of Minnesota, and as you drill down into a very specific location, it will show you not only the rate that is due in that area, but all of the whatever the additional local layers are. So it will break it down and show you exactly what the components of that total sales tax are. We have heard excellent feedback from our customers about how they appreciate this work. We think that it's important for us to provide this kind of service to our customers. We also do a lot of outreach. So we, particularly in this sales tax area, we believe it's important to meet our customers where they're at. And so we do sales tax courses across the state of Minnesota. So if you're starting a business and you're going to be making retail transactions subject to tax, last year we held over 60 classes across the state and on webinar, because sometimes that's easier for people, to make sure that they understood what they needed to do to comply with Minnesota's laws. We provide fact sheets about various business types and our new industry guides, which are a tool that are very focused on an industry and gather all of the information that one industry may need to know. For example, we have specific sales and use tax industry guides for restaurants and bars, the motor vehicle industry, personal services industry, retailers and wholesalers, and more. And all of these are available on our website. And the intent and the purpose of these is to reduce the time that businesses spend locating industry-specific information across the code and across our website and across the guidance so that it's really pulled together. We, in Minnesota, have an online file and pay system called e-services for businesses, and we have over 415,000 businesses using that. Again, giving them a convenient, secure system that allows them to manage their own accounts and to file and pay at a time that works for them. So if they are a small business owner and they want to go ahead and file at 10 p.m. at night, that system is available for them. It's not limited to business hours. One of the other initiatives that we've had over the past few years is we care deeply about making sure that our customers are getting the information that they need and that they are being treated as customers. I will tell you that when I sometimes speak to groups and talk about taxpayers as customers, I get a little pushback about whether people are customers, because it's not necessarily a voluntary transaction. I think, Representative, you and I have had this conversation. But we do, and we do. We train our employees to treat our taxpayers as customers, and including the opportunity to give us feedback. And so our sales and use tax division has been conducting in-depth audit quality surveys for more than 10 years. What that means is when you finish a sales and use tax audit, we send you a survey, and you can tell us exactly how you feel about the audit, how you were treated, the information you received, and you can see on the screen the results from the last calendar year of our audit quality survey report. We want to hear from customers, and we want to hear the good and the bad, because when we hear things that could go better, then what we do is we move that into our training, and we focus on improving the quality and the efficiency of our audits. We know that businesses have many things to do in addition to providing us with information, and so we try to minimize the time that we are on their site. We have new tools to allow them to do that, called an audit room, where they can submit their information again at whatever time is convenient to them securely, so that we don't have to go and gather all those documents at a work site. We can have them submit that to us if that's an option they choose. We also do this in our corporate division, so we also we expanded this in 2017. And so far we have received over 120 responses, which is a 20% response rate, which is actually quite good from a survey result, and we are proud of those results as well. We want you to know that we take this very seriously, and again, we ask for any feedback. I would also offer that if any of you hear specific feedback from your constituents about interactions with the department, I ask you to share those with us. It is a learning opportunity for us. We held ourselves to high standards, and we want to always make sure we're meeting those. We are, as I mentioned earlier, our mission is working together to fund Minnesota's future, and together is really the most important word of our mission. We cannot do this work without tax professional partners, those who prepare taxes, whether on a volunteer basis at VITA sites or is a part of a CPA firm or a law firm, and we always value their opinions, and we do a lot of outreach with that group as well to make sure that we can find better ways to serve Minnesota's taxpayers. We're grateful for opportunities like today where we can share with you how we prepare for each tax season, and we hope that the information we share with you today can help inform you about the importance of funding the tools that we need to serve Minnesotans across the state. I'm now going to turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Lee Ho, who will be providing a filing season update and also describing our change item, and then we'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Mr. Ho.
Chair Nelson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lee Ho, Deputy Commissioner of Revenue. Thank you for having me here today. I'm going to walk you through sort of the update to the tax filing system and a significant amount of work that the department does every year. So if you refer to the handout that's represented on the slide, one of the things you will notice is that the big bar there is engaging and communicating with stakeholders. This is one of the key things we do because, in particular this year, since there were significant revisions to the federal tax laws, but Minnesota's tax laws did not change, this was an important component, a much more important component this year than it has been in other years. So one of the things you will notice is that we did a significant amount of work to gather information from our stakeholders. We collected questions and posted them on a frequently asked questions part of our website so that people could constantly be updated on what were the questions other people were asking so they could learn from each other. We also hosted webinars and listening sessions and participated in conferences and other outreach events over the summer in order to engage with our stakeholders. And a lot of these sessions involved us walking through line by line draft forms so that we could better understand what our needs were as well as what the stakeholders' needs were throughout the season. So far, we've engaged with over 2,000 people in that process. We also published final forms and the instructions in early October so that our software developers could work and on their certification of their systems in order to work through the filing season. Inside the department, we also developed and tested our tax processing systems, and so we work with software providers to help certify and test their systems so that we're in continuous communication with them to make sure the system works each year. If you go to the next handout, one of the things you'll notice here is this is a series of cycles that we have, that once we provide near final forms, we start working internally and with our vendors in order to make sure the system works seamlessly. So the first thing we do internally is we gather requirements internally so that we can work with those software vendors and understand their products as well as understanding how the tax returns will flow and feed into our own systems. And so using that process, we create a path for that data to come into the department so that it can be processed and ultimately translated into refunds or payments as the taxpayers file their returns. But what happens at that point in time is the software providers are also doing a similar thing based on the requirements that they get from us. And so together we're collectively testing our systems, and then we're starting to test with each other during that process, and then it flows eventually to where we're working with the IRS as well. So we have three layers of services and vendors working together with systems so that we're constantly testing and retesting. Software providers are testing and retesting, and we're working with the IRS to make sure this all flows seamlessly so that when the millions of returns start flowing in January and late January, everything works as smoothly as possible. Now, one of the things that we do when we're looking at this is we really have a certain number of priorities that we follow in terms of how we go about producing the tax system each year. The first of those is to really minimize the impact on customers. You know, this is one of the things that's sort of a hallmark for the department, is really looking at what are the ways, as the commissioner pointed out with plain language, what are the ways that we can make the system, as complicated as it is, work more smoothly for our customers. So that's a key point of emphasis when we look at how we design the system each year. The second thing is we do things in order to support voluntary compliance. So we work to minimize the administrative impacts on all our customers by illustrating changes required to calculate taxes for 2018 and really trying to educate them about how to go about doing that process. And that we're also focused on protecting the integrity of the tax system in accordance with the laws that are currently in place. So those are the things that we try to do every year to make sure that the system functions correctly. Next, I'd like to talk to you, since this is income tax season, about what happens during the return processing. And you'll have a handout which has individual income tax return process on one side and property tax refund process on the other. Right now, I'm going to highlight just the individual income tax return process, because we issue over 1.7 million income tax refunds each year. And generally, there are two ways people go about filing their returns. One is electronically, and one is using paper. And as you can see, the paper process involves a few more steps, because if a return is filed electronically, it goes directly into our system and can be processed. If it comes in on paper, it requires us to convert that paper into digital information so that it can feed into our system and produce essentially the same result. And so that ends up being the two ways that returns get processed. And each return, of course, is different. And so what we do is we review each return to verify the information on the return and take the time necessary in order to make sure the right refund goes to the right person. If we have questions or need additional information, we will correspond with the taxpayer to get that information or to confirm the information with them. Once they're approved, the individuals will receive their refund either by mail or right into their bank account. A similar process is followed for property tax refunds, and as we noted earlier, the department issues over 800,000 property tax refunds each year. So a key dimension of the work that we do is protecting taxpayer information. One of those factors that is in place right now is to protect taxpayers against identity theft. And as many of you know, either through your own personal experience or the experience of others that you know, identity theft is becoming a greater and greater problem in this nation. We, along with the IRS, are sending warnings for increasing scams that are out there over emails that misrepresent the IRS, text messages, or calling over the phone to induce people to provide information that would give them access to their identities. And this is something that we are constantly on the alert for and something that we look for. This effort to ensure Minnesotans receive their refunds and not identity thieves means that we must take the time necessary to make sure the right refund goes to the right person. And each tax return is different, and then we review every return in order to verify the information on those returns. So that takes more time in the process as we go through and try to protect taxpayers' information. And this means that the length of time to process a return can differ from year to year. And as I mentioned earlier, we take the time necessary to verify that information on every return to make sure the right refund goes to the right person. You know, we have a dedicated team of the department that works tirelessly to process refunds as quickly as we can, but also protecting the tax refunds of Minnesotans. One of the other things we want to tell you about is how we protect taxpayer data. We know while using technology is important for convenience, it's also important to secure that information. We take the responsibility of protecting taxpayer information seriously. So, for example, we use security protocols for our e-services business accounts, much like those that you would find when you create an online account at your bank. Again, this is a way to verify a taxpayer's identity so that we can provide secure and convenient ways for them to access their accounts and information. I should also note that the department collects and houses federal tax information, also known as FTI. FTI is a return or any return information that we receive from the IRS, Social Security Administration, or the Bureau of Fiscal Service. And FTI also includes information that is created by the Department of Revenue that is derived from any return or any return information received from the IRS. So it includes more than just the data we get directly from the Internal Revenue Service. So the Department of Revenue, in partnership with Minnesota IT Services, MINIT, protects taxpayer data by blending the use of industry and regulatory controls and standards based on the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, NIST, Special Publication 853. The IRS, MINIT, and other major cybersecurity organizations develop their security guidelines based on these security controls and standards. Additionally, the use of NIST cybersecurity framework assists the department in measuring and identifying areas of risk, giving the department the ability to adjust and prioritize resources over time. key components of the department's security program. The first is security training and awareness. Staff receive annual security training and ongoing awareness campaigns. And we do these during brown bag sessions, special emails, and newsletters across the department to remind our employees of the importance of data security. These technology tools we use are fundamental and essential, but appropriately trained and alert employees can make all the difference. You may recall last year a number of employees at different organizations around the country voluntarily gave up private information provided of W-2 information to criminals because they were sent emails that looked very official to them. And these are constant things that we inform our employees to keep them aware and alert to different types of schemes and scams as we're aware of them. Securing our systems also involve a variety of methods. Some of those examples are maintaining an inventory of all our devices so we know what they are and the software and the applications that are being used within the department. You know, one of our other tools is web filtering and antivirus and anti-malware protection, which provides a layer of protection against malicious websites, files, and other things that could compromise the department systems. Revenue regularly reviews our data security practices so that we keep our systems up to date. That's another important element that we have at the department. One of the things we also do at Revenue is our systems development process mirrors a continuous improvement cycle. And based on customer feedback and commitment towards that continuous improvement, we're redesigning our Revenue website to make it easier to find and use the information and tools people rely on. We are moving to a new platform, Drupal, which is specifically designed for external web-facing websites. The beta version of the new site will be available through February, and the beta was announced through GovDelivery, social media, and through our outreach teams, and our current website. This is one of the ways that we test and retest things to make sure it's functioning before we actually roll them out in a public way. And through this process, we will be gathering user feedback through SurveyMonkey and other usability testing, and this feedback will help us refine the site before we go live with the new site later this year. This is a beta that's in preview only, and you're all you can all access it through our website if you go through the links if you want to take a look at it. Next, I would like to discuss our budget requests. As the commissioner mentioned earlier, the Minnesota Department of Revenue has 1,400 employees across 19 divisions in offices in St. Paul and 9 locations across the state. The department has a $167 million annual budget, and about 91% of our budget funds our employees and information technology. 74% of that is employees and 17% is information technology. Only 9% of our budget is for other agency expenses, primarily rent, lease, and mailing costs. As you learn from the commissioner, these operating funds assist the Department of Revenue in its role of collecting more than $23 billion in tax revenue annually for the state. The governor is recommending additional funding of $4.165 million in fiscal year 20 and $7.209 million in fiscal year 21 to maintain the current level of service delivered at the Department of Revenue. Those who file and pay Minnesota's taxes need to be able to trust the system that receives their personal information, that other taxpayers are paying their fair share, and that they will receive the right refund amount in a reasonable amount of time. Increased operational costs limit the department's ability to provide the level of service to our customers that they need and expect, and increased demands on the department have created the need for additional funding. Each year, the cost of doing business rises. Operating costs like rent and lease, fuel and utilities, mail expenses, IT and legal services, and known salary and compensation-related costs increase. This cost growth puts pressure on agency operating budgets that remain flat from year to year. Absorbing this increase with existing agency-based appropriations results in staffing and/or reduced non-compensation spending and impacts important services delivered to Minnesotans. As I just mentioned, the governor recommends increasing agency operating budgets to maintain the delivery of current services. For the Department of Revenue, this funding will cover known employee compensation growth and allow the department to maintain its existing level of information technology services. With this funding, the department and Minute at Revenue must reduce 82, without this funding, the department and Minute at Revenue must reduce 82 FTE over the biennium through attrition. This attrition will negatively impact our customers. What does this mean for Minnesotans? It means that customers will wait for longer refunds and have a harder time reaching someone at the department by phone or email to have their questions answered. Many customers will experience longer response times on the over 518,000 customer requests we receive each year by phone, email, web services, or in-person visits. Our customers will have to wait longer for their refunds as we sort and open and process more than 2.5 million pieces of mail annually. We will not be able to update information on our website as quickly and will publish fewer revenue notices and revenue analysis. The Department of Revenue will have fewer audits and enforcement activities that address patterns of noncompliance to ensure a fair tax system for all, and there would be a reduction in more than 250 educational sessions the department offered to provide assistance and guidance to our customers. The Department of Revenue provides over 160 classes to business taxpayers and tax preparers, 98 classes from sales tax, and over 3,000 educational visits by special taxes. Without funding, the department would have to reduce its existing investments in strong and efficient technology and cybersecurity systems and reduce our ability to quickly respond to evolving tax and identity fraud efforts. These are all areas that are growing. This proposal will allow the Department of Revenue to maintain our ability to meet our mission of funding Minnesota's future. The vision, everyone reports, pays, and receives the right amount, no more, no less, will be realized with the appropriate funds to serve our broad customer base and meet growing needs.
Mr. Chairman?
Hey. Commissioner?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. We greatly appreciate your time and your attention this morning as we have shared with you the work that we do on behalf of Minnesotans across our state. We would invite you to help us in some of this work by sharing the information about access to free electronic filing that is on our website. That information is in your packets. It is available, again, on our website. If you just go and put free file into our search box, you and your constituents will be able to understand what those offerings are made available through our software vendor partners. We strive to ensure that customers have the information and the tools that they need to meet their obligations under Minnesota's tax law. We do this as efficiently and effectively as possible, recognizing that the work that we do with our customers it may be taking away from the other work that they are doing, whether that may be taking care of their families or would be working on their business. And so we try to do that as efficiently as possible, providing them with tools and options that meet their needs. As Commissioner Ho mentioned, this operating request is really to maintain existing services. As is customary with other proposals that you will all see, the department will continue to provide the legislature with information about any additional administrative costs associated with tax policy changes or other changes. But this really is about continuing to serve customers in a very holistic way to meet their needs and provide the services to Minnesota as we collect the amounts that are due under our state laws. So we appreciate your time today. We will be happy to take any questions that you might have or provide additional information. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you for that. And before we go to questions, Representative Kwan, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
Mr. Chair, would not be appropriate for a person that has...
Well, that's right. You weren't there last time. Yes, Representative Hertas.
Yeah, thank the Minnesota weather.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. I'll move the minutes.
Representative Hertas moves the minutes of February 20th, 2019. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's approved. And I have a list of questions here. People have questions, and question I have that often comes up in the past is about enhanced compliance and as a way to raise money, and we've done that sometime in the past, and It's on the reverse side of that is if we cut the compliance, how does that affect the money that gets brought into the state of Minnesota? And I know Representative Kahn like to use enhanced compliance all the time as a way to boost her budget. So,
thank you, Chair Nelson. It is correct that for about 10 years, the state was under a compliance initiative. And what that meant is the department was given the funds to hire only auditors and collectors, and that there was a formula that was used to then calculate how much that would bring into the state budgets that you all used in your spreadsheets and your committee targets. I think, you know, that those initiatives ended about in 2010, and since then what we have done is really work to rebalance the services that we provide to Minnesotans. We know that it is not very productive to only focus on auditing and collecting. It is certainly important to have that as one tool as we do our work for Minnesota, but it is much more efficient for the state and for us and for our customers to make sure that they have the information that they need, and that includes all of those classes that we provide, all of the guidance that we're able to put on our website, and make sure that they have a filing system that is accessible and workable and ready enough for them to use. And that not only includes our individual income tax filing, but also our e-services. And as you can imagine, a technology system that like this requires a great deal of investment. And so what I would say is that I have heard from both our employees and our customers that the days of compliance initiatives are happily over, because it's not how we want to do our work, and it's certainly not how customers want to experience us. When we are required to be in a business and auditing every other year, it doesn't even give that business enough time to correct any mistakes that they might have had in their system that we found in the last audit. And that certainly isn't what we how we want to do our work. We know that the vast majority of Minnesotans want to comply with their obligations under Minnesota's laws. And so what we need to do is approach that from a broad spectrum of tools and holistically give them that opportunity at the front end, help make sure that those who are not doing that or who are defrauding others, we do some work with our Criminal Investigations Division on fraudulent preparers. You may have seen some news reports recently of preparers who were basically artificially inflating refunds for individuals. They, of course, need to pay the right amount, so we work with them to do that, but these individuals are making a living by defrauding the taxpayers in Minnesota. So we work to curb that as well and direct people to high-quality tax preparation services. So we think it's far better to have a very broad set of services available. Our customers are demanding more from us. I will tell you the number of revenue analyses requested by the legislature increases every year. And so our research division is very, very busy, and we've needed to add staff to make sure that we are keeping up with the capacity that you all expect from us. And the same is true from every other customer set. So professional tax preparers and lawyers have told us that they want more in the terms of formal guidance through revenue notices, so we have worked to increase that. But that takes, you know, very talented staff to be able to do that work. And so, and those folks are policy analysts, those are lawyers, those are researchers, not always auditors and collectors. So, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity to share with you the impact of that choice, those choices that were made about a decade ago, and the caution that that is something that we do not hear from our customers, that they appreciate that approach. So, thank you.
Well, in the second half of that, if we end up not fulfilling the governor's request, what happens to your department, and how does that affect revenues coming into the state?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Nelson. If we if we are not able to receive this funding, what we would do, as Commissioner Ho mentioned, is we would wind up losing staff, about 82 staff over the time period. And, of course, those people are right now working at the Department of Revenue, fully serving customers. And so what we would do is work to balance any vacancies that we have and make sure that we are prioritizing the work that we need to do. But there will inevitably be impacts on customers. And when people don't have the ability, if there's something that is not as efficient about our system, so if businesses aren't able to access our e-service services system 24 hours a day. That might impact their ability to get those payments in on time. If we're not able to work our audit work with those furthest from compliance, that might result in less money coming into the general fund. So I think there is a significant concern about a loss of revenue that would result from not having the funding the department needs to fully serve its customers.
Thank you. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got several questions, actually. With respect to the sales tax rate calculator, Commissioner Bowerly, I'm guessing that in the wake of the Wayfair decision, you've got a lot of national retailers who are wondering how they get access to the sales tax information. And I'm guessing that you probably have I'm guessing the states have probably collaborated on putting together a specification for a standardized application programming interface that would allow a retailer to put in a product code and a 9-digit zip code and get the appropriate tax amount back.
Chair Nelson and Representative, when the Supreme Court announced its decision in June, we immediately got to work with our colleague other states who are part of the Streamlined Sales Tax Program. About 24 states, we actually hosted an emergency meeting of the Streamlined Sales Tax Board here in Minnesota in July. And that is a public meeting where we had the opportunity to interface with all of our business customers. About 100 people showed up from across the country to talk about what estates need to do to help retailers comply with these new obligations. And so from the very beginning, we focused on what our business customers need. We worked with them individually if they had issues about how to get up and running. Through Streamlined Sales Tax, the initiative that about 24 states have been engaged in for the past two decades, what we really do is try to you know, following the name of the organization, Streamline. And so Minnesota, as a member of Streamline, has, for example, we have one sales tax rate that is applicable to certain types of goods. We have some common definitions that we share that are governed, that come from Streamline guidance. And one of the things that Streamline has done over time is worked with CSPs, or certified service providers. And so these are businesses that work with retailers, and they can provide them with all of the, they can register once, for example, through Streamline and work with a certified service provider to help meet their obligations in many states. And so since the Wayfair decision, what Streamline and Minnesota have been doing is working to open up that so it's not just available for Streamline states, but many other states. And so we're working with large states like California and Texas to figure out how do we make this easier for customers. And what we know is that for Minnesota retailers who may now have obligations in other states, what we've been doing is working with them to make sure that we can help them get the information that they need from those other states and be able to comply with those, where we know that we're their first call. So we've done a lot of work, and we're very proud of the fact that the Tax Foundation put out a survey in the fall that identified states that had been doing this work, and they identified Minnesota as one of the green to go states because of the work that we had in place, the fact that we had good laws on our books, that the department had been able to put out at least 90 days notice of when our enforcement would start. So the law changed effective with that Supreme Court decision, but we announced an October 1st enforcement date. That was sort of a compromise between our brick and mortar retailers who wanted to make sure their competitors, of course, were meeting that obligation as quickly as possible, and we also have a 90-day notice window in our statute. So we settled on October 1st, and we have been working with individually and with groups of retailers ever since to make sure that they are able to have the information they need to meet their obligations. So,
Representative Elkins.
Yes. Next question is for Deputy Commissioner Ho. The beta website for the department, as part of the beta test team, anyone from the Minnesota Council for Disabilities related to digital accessibility requirements?
Commissioner Ho.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm not familiar with all the participants, but we do have a wide variety of people and organizations that help support our use of the website. That's something we can find out and get back to you about.
Okay, thank you. If you don't have a contact there, I can provide one.
And we've had, there's somebody that's not contacted us a lot about having accessibility and issues, and so that's an important thing that we need to make sure that all our websites meet all the accessibility standards.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's absolute priority for us as well.
And Chair Nelson and Representative, we have an accessibility expert on our communications team who helps to make sure that our documents that are available on our website are accessible to screen readers and other technology. And I also understand that this Drupal platform, I am not a technology person, but I understand this new platform will also make that easier for us to make sure we are providing that anything on our website and more accessible. But we appreciate that, and as we're doing usability testing right now, we will go back to our team and confirm that we have someone who can help ensure that we are getting all of the feedback we need to from our community of people with disabilities.
And that's going to help here. Thank you. I got one last set of questions. Currently, are your IT team members, are they employees of the department or of MNIT?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, all of the IT staff of the state of Minnesota, including those who work at Revenue, are MNIT employees. Mm-hmm. We have about 100 of them who work day-to-day right next to our team. I will tell you, we have an excellent partnership with them, and it is a source of pride when we have a project team that presents information, and it's difficult for us to tell which is the actual IT person and which is the business partner, because they are very close partners with us in all of the work that we do.
That's the way it's supposed to work. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I would like to acknowledge that looking at the testifiers at the table, that a certain person that we generally see year in, year out did leave and join the House staff, and that my understanding is that there'll need to be two people to fill his shoes. But on to the fraudulent filing attempts and successes. It'd be nice if the committee had an idea of what those counts have been and what they are. And then during the testimony, there was a statement that when filings and returns start in late January, well, it being late February, it maybe be nice to know if that is at the normal pace and level, if there's been some adjustment, because frankly, my understanding is the complexity of filing Minnesota returns was significantly impacted by not having tax conformity, even though it passed the chamber twice. So if there are any comments as to how much more complex, because they did mention how they had to update, and what sort of impact that maybe was on the citizens.
And I know for my one son, who's already filed and gotten both his state and federal tax returns back, he filed almost right away, and he said he got them back in about 2.5 weeks. So, Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Kwong. Actually, we are quite on pace with where we were last year. We actually opened a little bit later this year. We, you know, as the calendar falls, and we open when the IRS opens, and the IRS did open on January 28th. So as I mentioned, we've already received over 620,000 returns, and about last year at this time, we had received about 640,000 returns, and as I said, we did open a little bit later. Commissioner Ho mentioned, we have worked very hard to make the filing system as seamless as possible. There were significant changes at the federal level, and so the vendors and the tax preparers are working to adjust to those changes. Minnesota law hasn't changed. And so I think when we think about filing, particularly when you're using electronic vendor, you know, there are new questions that you need to answer at the federal level. For example, there's a changed child tax credit. So you might have to answer questions as you're going through the process to determine your eligibility for the child tax credit. This year, at the federal level, itemized deductions are no longer available. And so if you had itemized deductions last year, what you did is you answered questions about your eligibility for itemized deductions, and that information flowed to both your federal and your state return. This year, you're answering the same questions, but it's only flowing to your Minnesota return. So we work very hard to make the system as seamless as possible, recognizing that there are differences. and we are working to make sure that we have all of the information and resources. And that, again, is one of the reasons we are really encouraging. About 90% of Minnesotans already file electronically, so but this is a great year to start electronically filing if you have not yet been doing that, because it will just make any of those differences between the federal and the state law, and especially the changes of the federal law, more understandable for you. So I hope that helps answer your question, Representative Quam. And you had the first part of your question, and I'm sorry, I need you to remind me of that question. I'm very sorry.
Representative Quam, if you want to repeat the first part of your question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I wanted to clarify, am I mistaken? I know Minnesota law did not change because the conformer we passed twice were vetoed. But my understanding is that the state forms had to change because the federal forms changed, and there are differences now, and there may be more forms that we have to include when you do our state filing. And that's why I asked about the complexity, because I assumed that your department would be very familiar with the additional complexity versus last year. But the initial one was having understanding of, because of all of the issues we have with identity theft that seem to be cascading, for fraudulent filing attempts and successes, how has that been over recent years? And then I'm assuming after the April 15th we'll have an idea for this year, but they tend to file pretty quick so they can get in before the actual person. So that was the part of the question that was missing.
Yeah, and I've heard some stuff on the radio talk about federal government saying file early because that way you're going to get it, as opposed to somebody that's filing in your place might get your return. Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Chair Nelson, and Representative Quam. Thank you for that reminder. I apologize. So we don't have the numbers on us today, but we can provide you with a snapshot of over time. As you know, we've been investing and working hard to combat this identity theft. I think we're all getting better at it. So what I will say is I want to make sure that if a Minnesotan has had their identity stolen, that they know they will get their refund. The challenge will be is if a criminal gets access to a refund, that is a loss to the general fund. And so our goal is to make sure that never goes out the door. And we have worked hard with our partners in the banking industry, and particularly sometimes we see those, some people use those debit cards for their refunds. We work hard with that industry to make sure that we're catching any potential fraudulent refunds that go out, and we take time to review those inside the department. So I think the biggest impact that I would say customers have seen over the past 4 years, as we've really been combating that, is that refunds can take a little bit longer, again, depending on your situation. They might receive a letter from us asking them to give us a call or go to our website and verify their identity. That's one of the ways that we continue to be able to process those returns and reduce the amount of fraud that's happening. So we can certainly follow up with some understanding of the incidence rates that we're looking at in Minnesota. I will tell you, we received a call from a preparer in another state who's an employee fell victim to one of the email phishing scams and had provided access to their system. They were out of state, but they did have some Minnesota residents that they were preparing taxes for, and so we worked closely with them to let them know what they needed to do and how we would try to work to flag that their customers in our system. We did receive positive feedback that they had been working with a couple of other states and the IRS, and they let us know that they really appreciated our thoroughness and our efficiency, because we have protocols set up when we get these sorts of calls to deal with it. So I think we're working very hard, and we'll be happy to share with you sort of what a high level of what we see happening over time, because we have been making investments. And then I think it would take us later in the spring we can probably talk a little bit more detail about this filing season.
And Commissioner, you're not sending out emails to people telling them their taxes, and you're not sending out phone calls. I've been getting a few of those. I guess I'm at that age now the phone calls, people saying that you haven't paid your taxes, and you do it by letter, not by, and I'm asking this for the general public that may be listening.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we contact a customer, we do it by letter. If we call someone, it's because we are returning a phone call to them. And so if you receive a phone call that says that someone is from the Department of Revenue or the IRS and demands payment over the phone in credit card or iTunes cards, I'm not kidding, that actually happened, that is not a legitimate call. And if you ever have a doubt, what you should do is ask for a number to call back, and then you can make a return call. Check out our website for any of our lines. If you receive suspicious calls and want to let us know, it's very helpful. We can send alerts out to Minnesotans so that everyone can be aware of these scams that unfortunately prey on people. So we are happy to set up payment plans with people. We do not call you up and demand that you need to give us a credit card number or you're going to jail. That is not something the Minnesota Department of Revenue or the IRS will ever do.
Representative Kwong.
To the question about the complexity, because that is the one thing I hear from accountants, a lot of farmers, and others, that the additional work. Did you have comments, since I am assuming that was part of that one slide with a separate sheet, you emphasized that you did all of this work in order to get us ready. So how much of an impact is that complexity by not being conforming and compatible like normal with the federal return?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kwong, so as you noted, Deputy Commissioner Lee Ho described was the work that we did to really try to make minimize the impact of the differences between federal and state law. And so we did sit down all summer long. We met with over 2,000 individuals. We did actually a working session with tax preparers to walk through some of our new forms and get feedback on how they worked for them. There are changes. The one issue that farmers may be looking at is 179 expensing. If you put a new asset into your business last year, Minnesota is not conformed to the full scope of 179. That is not the first time that has happened in Minnesota law, and typically the legislature has moved to make that conformity retroactive to catch that up, and that's one of the proposals that the governor has in his budget to make sure that they can and take those into account. I will say I think it's very important that when we talk about the tax filing season, 2.9 million Minnesotans file their taxes every year, and for most of us, if you have W-2 and you take a standard deduction, it's a relatively simple process. And so I want us to be careful when we talk about complexity that we are focusing it on the place where it is. For example, if you have net operating losses, I completely agree that tracking separate net operating losses at the federal level and the state level can be a significant amount of work. There are about 65,000 returns of those 2.9 million returns that have net operating losses on them. So I'm not diminishing that can be more complex for those taxpayers, but I also want to make sure taxpayers who have W-2s and are claiming the credits under Minnesota law aren't nervous about going ahead and filing. And again, I do think as we're into this filing season, almost a month, we are continuing to talk with CPAs and talk with them and give them specific and individualized help about how to navigate this year's filing system.
Representative Kwong. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have two questions. Welcome, Ms. Bowerly, to the committee, and usually see you in tax committee. So I've been a customer for several decades. And
so you're the one.
Yeah.
Talking about.
Yeah.
I feel like we've made progress. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I feel like we've made progress, Representative.
Well, I was very pleased that she remembered that conversation, that a customer is a voluntary transaction. But anyway, that having been said, one of the innovations in my time, of course, is the advent of electronic filing. And in the old days, you wrote a check and put it in an envelope, and it'd take a while before the money actually left your bank. And one of the painful parts of electronic filing is when you push that last button, it's gone, and never to be seen again. But with regards to my question, with the efficiencies that come with it, and I enjoy that part of it too, because I don't ever bother to go back to my tax preparer. He just files it electronically for me. I get the hard copies in the mail. But with that efficiency, and this probably precedes your being commissioner, but I noticed you had some data about your budget and the number of FTEs. Are there some efficiencies? Has there been a trend line that the number of full-time employees has gone down at the department, or is it stable, or is it growing, or can you comment on that?
Sure. Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hertas, you're correct that the way we do our work has changed dramatically, and I might ask Commissioner Ho to describe when he was at the agency and we built the current building. There was a whole floor of paper that was related to paper filing. So we have changed the type of employee that we have, right? We no longer have as many individuals who are focused on sorting and tracking and dealing with that paper because it's electronic. But we do have, we still have to have auditors, and auditors now just review electronic records rather than paper records, right? So that's changed. We have different, we have employees who work on our systems and deal with those electronic records in a different way than in the paper way, but we still need those employees. And so the other thing that has dramatically changed, of course, is the number of tax filers. So even as the type of work has changed from moving from paper to electronic, of course, we have hundreds of thousands of more filers. And if you'd like, we could give you a historical trend, but we have almost 2% more individual income tax filers each year. People entering the workforce, people who have new obligations are filing, and so there's just an increased volume. And so, for example, the work we're doing around fraud, which we just started about 4 years ago when this really became a trend for criminals to try to claim tax refunds, we have a new unit of individuals who are focused on that work. So it ebbs and it changes the type of work that we're doing, but I think it's just because we moved to, so now we have people who run the technology systems instead of opening as much mail, but we still have people opening mail, of course. So those are some of the things that have changed in the way that we do our work.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you. Well, you talked about how that's changed, but I mean, is the FTE level constant or growing, or has there been a improvement over even the time preceding you that mm-hmm. less is hand paper shuffling and more of it mm-hmm. automated and electronic? Or, you know, what kind of efficiency are we talking about? Because if you take number of returns into your budget, that might extrapolate to $50 a return or so that it's costing administratively for compliance. So you have some comment on that? Mm-hmm.
Commissioner.
Sure. Mr. Chairman and Representative Hertas, I'd have to pull up our budget book to look at the historical number of FTEs, but we have been at about this level for I would say the past 3 or 4 years at between about 1,350 and 1,400 employees. And again, that is to provide all of those services that we have talked about. You know, when we were doing purely paper filing in the mid-90s, of course, we didn't have a robust website where we were providing that kind of guidance. We didn't have an electronic filing system for businesses. That, of course, takes skilled staff to work with businesses to get their accounts set up. So I'd have to look back historical data to get closer to the change in time you're talking about, but we've been relatively constant. I will also note that as we are asked to administer more taxes, right, there are 48 tax statutes on the books now in Minnesota, we also have to increase our staffing to make sure that Minnesotans have access to new changes in our law. In 2017, there was a significant tax bill. It included things like a new home, first-time home buyer's credit. So we had to have staff who were able to get that system set up for taxpayers so that they could get those accounts registered and then be able to take that credit on their returns when it does get filed. So again, the work has changed dramatically. I think we've held rather constant, save for the additional work, and then of course we do have additional team members who have to complete that work for Minnesotans.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one last question on a different subject. It's come to my attention since I've been here at the legislature, seeing some of your messages pop up, and I just wanted to comment about that email that announces bad actors with regard to payment of taxes or people who have had judgments or liens or whatever. I kind of view that like the scarlet letter. Is that something we really should be doing with regard to our culture and our values? Should we be hanging somebody up out to dry because they have compliance issues or tax problems?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hertas, I'm not exactly sure which you're referring to, but if you're referring to liquor postings, we do, under statute, are required to publish monthly names of entities who are delinquent in sales tax, and that is published because there are distributors who are required under law to not sell product to them. So that is the only posting that we do here in Minnesota. We do issue press releases when there are criminal charges filed, but otherwise we do not share publicly, and we cannot share publicly any other type of delinquency. Liens are available publicly through the Secretary of State's website. We do not share that. If we are asked under data practices, we do have to provide that information, but we do not generally publish that type of information. The only publication that we do is around liquor posting, and again, that is required by the statute so that we are notifying distributors that they cannot sell product lawfully to those entities. So if there are other areas that you have in mind, we'd be happy to talk with you about them, but again, generally it's criminal charges that have been filed by a county prosecutor or, again, pursuant to the state statute, posting of delinquent sales taxes for the purposes of letting liquor distributors know that they cannot purchase.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for that clarification. I guess that answers why you're doing that, so thank you.
It's our fault. We put it in the statute. Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Bowerly. A lot of the conversation kind of leading up to this has prompted me to come up with a question, and that being, while yes, it is tax filing season, it's fraud prevention season too, I guess we can also call it. I've done some work with the Department of Commerce in reaching out to a lot of the nursing homes in my community, and I always prompt by asking the question, how many of you have been a victim of fraud, and every hand in the room goes up. And the Department of Commerce seems to be doing a really good job of getting the word out and has some a toolkit to help with that. And it does include a lot of your works or your department's works as well. So I was happy to see that. Can you expand on just some of that interagency coordination that may occur in terms of the fraudsters are pretty clever. And the reason why they continue to do fraud by phone is because it's quite effective. So from a statewide perspective, can you speak to some of the interaction that occurs between departments to prevent fraud?
Commissioner.
Chair Nelson and Representative Carlson, we appreciate the opportunity to work with our colleagues at the Department of Commerce. They are largely responsible for the broader initiatives around all kinds of fraud prevention. Of course, we're very focused on one type, but of course, if you are a victim of identity theft, it's not going to be limited to your taxes, and what's really important is that you have the information to be able to protect yourself. So we do it on a couple of levels, both here in the state, and then the IRS and the FTC also have a lot of good information out there. And so in the tax ecosystem, we are really trying to focus on preparers, because they hold a lot of valuable information and their systems are just as vulnerable to someone opening an email improperly as anyone else's. And so again, as Commissioner Ho said, we at the department focus on security as every employee's responsibility. So we do a lot of training about making sure our system, and we lock down our systems in ways that we can't, if you do happen to click on something inappropriately, it doesn't execute and it doesn't allow for that infection. And so I think I would say the statewide efforts are both in that public space to make sure consumers are aware, and then also making sure that the state's IT systems are locked down. And then, you know, as I mentioned, we can certainly help someone deal with their tax situation, but they're going to have other ripple effects. And so our role is to also then make sure that they are handed off to other experts who can help them, whether that's at, you know, resources at the FTC, resources at the Department of Commerce, to help them deal with the other impacts of identity theft.
Representative Carlson. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of quick things, and I think we're probably about done. But when we were talking about digital accessibility, you guys mentioned the name of a particular platform that makes that you're using that makes that easier, and I wanted to make note of what the name of that the platform.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, it's called Drupal, D-R-U-P-A-L.
And then a question for the chair. Do you want us to leave these binders? Yes, so you can keep adding to it.
I was going to say that at the end, to leave the binders, and I have to catch with Representative Freiberg, who took his with him. We have to. We just currently just have the one section in here, and as you can see all the tabs, we have a lot of sections that are part of our. So as those get printed, we'll get them put in here. So please leave your binders here so that we can collect them. And once we get them all loaded, if you want to take them and bring them back with you, that's fine. But for right now, please leave them here. What's that?
They can also look at it online.
And you can also, if you want, you can also look at it online. As was pointed out to here. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize, I didn't get a chance to look at this as closely as I should have yet. Traffic, again, was the nemesis this morning. But you said that the ask is for another $11 million, and it was broke down $4 million in this fiscal year and $4 million and $7 million. Is that going toward new employees or existing raises?
Commissioner.
Chair Nelson and Representative Vogel, that is a number that will maintain our current employees. There are no new FTE in that amount of money. We have increased costs like any organization does. For example, employer-paid health contributions and other existing salary obligations. So, as you know, the state will contract with our labor unions in the summer. This does not anticipate any changes relative to that. We would have to absorb those costs. But existing people who are who will be promoted because they are doing excellent work and they take a new job, for example, compensation, other operating costs. We lease our buildings across the state, pay rent to the state of Minnesota for the Stassen building. Those costs go up. Our utility costs go up just like every other agency. And then in addition, in the 2021 biennium, the Department of Revenue's portion of Minute's administrative overhead is planned to increase. And so we pay Minute as a colleague agency, but we pay for those services, and that includes the about 100 employees who are dedicated at the Department of Revenue, so the salaries for those individuals. In addition to, as you know, Minute is set up as a central service billing. They don't have their own appropriation for their own function, so state agencies, as a part of our work with Minute, pay for the services that they provide, including the same services that we provide for our employees, everything from HR and finance and all of those things that have to happen to provide services to state agencies. So those are the components of that request. And again, it is no new FTE. The FTE number that you see on the change page is identified as maintaining, because if we don't get this additional funding, as Commissioner Ho laid out, only about 9% of our budget is in other things like mail or rent, and so really it comes out of our salaries for our staff, and that's where the reductions would naturally come. We can't reduce our mail costs because, as you know, the post office, we actually just have an increase in our postal costs, as everyone did with new stamp prices, but we have to communicate with taxpayers, and that is the way we, you know, do that. So we cannot, you know, at this point under Minnesota law, that is an official way of communicating with taxpayers. So we can't just not communicate.
Yeah. Representative Volga.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So looking at the $11 million increase on the $167 million comes out to about 6.6%. Assume 75% of that is payroll. So basically it's going up 4.9% for the payroll cost in that vicinity. Curious, what did it go up the previous biennium?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Vogel, I'm sorry I don't have that percentage in front of me. We can certainly go back to the last biennium and give you that information.
If you can provide that to the committee, we can provide it to everybody.
Thank you.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that.
Any other questions? Well, members, Commissioner, thank you for your presentation, and thank you for the information. And And as was noted earlier, members, leave your books here. The legislative assistant, Will Sidney, will collect them, and we will get them filled up with all the information, and we will be using these as we go through our budget and our budget process going forward. And so, and they'll be at the tables the day we're hearing budget overviews.
Exactly.
So, members, with that, I think we're done for the day, so we are adjourned.